This episode of the Shakeout Podcast is part of the Under Armour Diversity Series, a partnership between Under Armour and Canadian Running Magazine designed to highlight extraordinary Canadians who are making a difference in their communities and on the national running scene. And just a note before we begin that this episode contains references to Canada's residential school system and to the atrocities committed against Indigenous peoples. Please take care while listening.
When you tell someone like, oh, I'm going to run 26 kilometers, it seems like far away. But when you're a kid and only 26 kilometers is separating you from your family, you would have made that run any day of the week.
Welcome to the Shakeout Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Van Buskirk. Trishel Bunn is an athlete and activist. She plays defense for the University of Manitoba Bison's hockey team. And until recently, she wasn't much of a runner. But in May 2021, when 215 unmarked graves were discovered on the former grounds of the Kamloops Residential School, Trishel decided to take action. Trishel founded a healing walk and directed the first Reconciliation Run half marathon, using movement as medicine to empower her communities and reclaim space. Trishel is also the recipient of the Student Community Builder Award at last year's Indigenous Awards of Excellence, and is featured in the Under Armour Diversity Series with Canadian Running Magazine.
My name is Trishel Bunn. I'm 22 years old. I'm a proud member of Birdtail Sioux Dakota Nation, a small First Nation right along the Manitoba-Saskatchewan border. I grew up in Wampaw, Manitoba with my family. I played hockey my whole life. And as an Indigenous woman, sport has always been a very crucial and important part of my life. So movement as medicine is something that's guided me. I started playing hockey when I was 3 years old. So my dad actually built me a backyard rink and he threw skates on me when I was three. So I've been playing ever since. So it's going on 20 years this March of playing the game that I love. Any type of sport and like even movement has always been, I think, a large part of my life just because I grew up with the teaching of using movement as medicine. So for me, that's always been a way for me to kind of stay balanced on the four quadrants of the medicine wheel. So using sport and movement to stay balanced physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And it ties back to like Indigenous culture that Indigenous peoples were always like very active and moving, whether it's for like hunting and gathering purposes and like survival, or if it was, you know, for dancing and ceremony. So I think, you know, movement is a large part of an Indigenous culture, and sport and being Indigenous kind of make up who I am. So I'm excited to share my story.
Hey, Trishel, thank you so much for joining us today on The Shakeout. I want to talk about the Reconciliation Run and your role as the race director. But as you just mentioned, I know that hockey has been your primary love and that you've really enjoyed a lot of success in that sport. I'm sure you do some run training as conditioning for hockey, but did you grow up doing much running other than that? Would you have considered yourself a runner prior to this last year?
Yeah, so I think that's kind of like the funny part about me and like my story is, I think if anyone knew me, I was never much of a runner. And it's funny, like even growing up, my dad was basically like my personal hockey coach and personal trainer growing up for hockey. So he'd say like, let's go on a 3 mile run. And I was like, no, I don't want to go. Like I'm not much of a runner. So I think it's a little funny sometimes when I tell people that I organize a half marathon, it's kind of like, it's kind of out of my comfort zone, but it's something that, you know, there's so many ways that running, like the sport of running, can bring people together. So I think I appreciate that sense of it, but no, I don't have like a history with running myself.
Well, all the more reason that it's really impressive that you've, you know, taken running into your life in such a you know, a major way. So let's get into that. You know, in addition to your impressive resume, you are also the founder and the race director for the inaugural Reconciliation Run, which I know brought together participants from across the country. And you say that it was to run in the spirit of reconciliation and engage in reflection on the National Day for Truth and Reconciliation. Maybe you can tell us more about the run. What was the inspiration behind it and how did it all come together?
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting story when I think back of it. So the Reconciliation Run was actually inspired by a healing walk that I organized in July of 2021. And that all kind of stems from, you know, the 215 recoveries in Kamloops. And I think it just really hit home for me and my family, but also the entire Indigenous community, just because I don't think it can be said enough that, you know, those are the stories that Indigenous peoples have been telling for generations, and like the stories of children being buried in unmarked graves and not returning home from residential schools is like stories that my Kushi, so my grandmother and my Onkla, my grandfather, like told me and my dad and my family growing up. So I think for like the Indigenous community and like as intergenerational survivors, like of my generation, I think it kind of just, it reopened a lot of things. But it was strange because for a lot, like the rest of the country or the world and, you know, the non-Indigenous community, it was kind of like shocking, but I don't think it wasn't shocking for the Indigenous community. But if there's any positive that can be taken out of it is I think it really, you know, awoken the world and the rest of the country to, you know, the stories that Indigenous peoples have been telling for generations are true. And they were silenced for so long. Like growing up, I heard my grandparents' stories and what they endured at residential schools and like the absolute horror that they faced. But it was like you go to history class in Canada and like the residential school chapters, not even a chapter, it's a page. And, you know, you don't really get to talk about, you know, what really happened there. So I think that was something that I always kind of carried with me of like, I know their truth, but it wasn't really my truth to tell. But they didn't really want to talk about it either, because when they tried to talk about it, like no one believed them.
Just over 20 kilometers north of the Birdtail Sioux Dakota Nation in western Manitoba sits a property that was once known as the Birdle Residential School. For nearly a century, it operated as a day school, then as a boarding school, as part of the government and church-run system that removed First Nations, Inuit, and Métis children from their families and communities. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada has concluded that residential schools were, quote, a systematic, government-sponsored attempt to destroy Aboriginal cultures and languages and to assimilate Aboriginal peoples so that they no longer existed as distinct peoples. The commission has characterized this practice as cultural genocide. Trishel's Kushi and Unka, her grandparents, along with many other members of the Birdtail Sioux Dakota Nation, were survivors of the Birdle Residential School.
The first time I attended the Birdle Residential School, where my Kushi and my Unka were taken to, was when I was about 10 years old. And I remember going there with my aunt and my dad and my mom. And I remember feeling so like heavy and so sad. I just like knew what they experienced there, and to be like standing on that property and like knowing that they were taken there forcefully and unwillingly. I think I was 10 years old, and as I got older, I've reflected back on that very moment and that first visit so many times, and it just seems to impact me more as the older I got.
Trishel is a natural leader. She's always considered herself a problem solver. Listening to the stories of her Kushi and Unka, hearing about the discoveries of the unmarked graves in Kamloops and across the country, and recognizing the hurt in her community, she felt compelled to take action.
I kind of came to the idea of, you know, doing a healing walk. And I think the idea of doing a walk was quite popular across the country, you know, on July 1st for Cancel Canada Day movement. But I think for me, what stuck out the most was a story that my uncle Donald, so my grandfather who attended Birdle Residential School, told me. He said that when he was taken to the Birdle Residential School, he wanted nothing more than to just run away and go home. And I don't know, I still get chills when I think about it. And I just think like, he's a young boy and he wanted to return home to his family. And Birdle to Birdtail Sioux, where he lived at the time, so my First Nation, is 26 kilometers. And when you tell someone like, oh, I'm gonna run 26 kilometers or walk 26 kilometers, it seems like a pretty far away. It's like the distance of a half marathon. But when you're a kid and only 26 kilometers is separating from you from your family, you would have made that run any day of the week. And unfortunately, he never did get the chance to, because he saw the consequences that his classmates faced when they did attempt to run away. So he never did make the attempt himself. That's when the idea kind of came, like, I want to walk home in honor of Unka Donald, because he never had the chance to. So both my Kushi Mildred and my Unka Donald, who were the Birdle Residential School survivors, they've passed on now, but I wanted to do the walk and to walk home in honor of them, and walking home in honor of all the children who were taken to residential schools and never got the chance to walk home on their own terms.
It started as a Facebook post. Trachelle invited her friends and family to join her on July 1st at the grounds of the former Birtle Residential School and to walk with her back to Birdtail Sioux. But the post went viral. It got picked up by several media outlets, and suddenly Trachelle was fielding calls and messages from people across Canada asking if they could participate or how to create their own healing walks in their communities in solidarity.
The original healing walk took place on July 1st of 2021, and it started on the former grounds of the Birtle Residential School. And we had an elder from my community and Birtle Residential School survivor, Terry Westace-Jay. He started the healing walk off with a prayer, and he kind of shared his story. And I think my favorite thing is when I talk about Terry is he always talks and he shares his story, but he has absolutely no anger in his voice at all when he shares his story, and his tone is so positive. And I think that really spoke to, you know, everyone there that day. And he shared what he faced at the Birtle Residential School, but he had so much hope for the future. And I think that kind of speaks to the resilience of, you know, Indigenous peoples everywhere. And here we had a Birtle Residential School survivor standing on the front lawn of that very institution he was taken to, and he was telling us that it was going to be okay and that the future was going to be okay. He ended up performing actually a traditional pipe ceremony. So for me too, that's one of my favorite parts of the healing walk, is that he performed, you know, a pipe ceremony on the very front lawn that children, Indigenous children, were taken to eradicate, completely eradicate Indigenous peoples and Indigenous culture. And he truly reclaimed that space for everyone that day, you know, by practicing our culture on, you know, the very front lawn of it. I still remember standing there, I just took a look around and I saw members of my community, other Indigenous peoples from other communities around Manitoba, and then a lot of non-Indigenous people. And it was such a positive thing, because there was almost that like hesitation from the non-Indigenous community saying like, is it okay if we participate? That kind of spoke to, you know, people are wanting to engage in these opportunities, but they want to do so respectfully and honestly and in a good way. And I was like, yeah, you're more than welcome to come. And I think it was really beautiful, you know, especially when there was so much hurt going on, that we were able to come together and kind of heal and learn alongside each other. It was such an emotional day. And I originally, when I first thought about going back for the healing walk, I thought I was going to feel like how I did when I was 10 years old and, you know, return there and feel heavy and dark. But I truly left that there that day, you know, like feeling hopeful. And I felt like almost like freeing.
The walk was an enormous undertaking for many of the participants. But Trachelle says that despite covering such a huge distance in the sweltering July heat, no one complained. When they finally reached Birdtail Sioux, the group took a picture by their community sign wearing their orange shirts and celebrated with feast and storytelling.
It also gave survivors a chance to tell their stories, and a lot of the survivors from my community said it was the first time that they were telling their stories, and it was the first time that they had returned to the Birtle Residential School since they were taken there when they were kids. And they talked so much that just that walk there that day, and, you know, a lot of them were older, so they couldn't make the full 26 kilometers, but just walking onto the property and walking off of it was a way for them, you know, to find healing and to finally reclaim that space back. It was just so powerful that I was like, this has to be done again.
One of the participants of the walk was actually a runner who suggested that Trachelle could consider turning the walk into an annual half marathon. So Trachelle and her family, who were not runners, but recognized the power of this communal movement, formed a Reconciliation Run committee and got to work learning everything they needed to do to put on a race.
We decided to have the Reconciliation Run on the National Day for Truth and Reconciliation, so September 30th, 2022, because of how many non-Indigenous people did reach out for the healing walk, and it was truly an act of reconciliation. So I think by having, like, inviting the non-Indigenous community to come to the healing walk and have them, you know, come to a First Nation in Canada where, you know, so many non-Indigenous peoples have never been to a First Nation, you know, engage with Indigenous peoples and, you know, hear those stories, I think was really spoke to reconciliation and that owning that truth. So yeah, it was a long time in the coming, but I think it was really fitting to do it on the National Day for Truth and Reconciliation. I think by bringing people together and, you know, kind of having it centered around a marathon kind of gives participants an active way to engage, but to also, you know, reflect while they're running and as they're walking, and to, you know, hear from an elder again.
Using the healing walk as the template, the first annual Reconciliation Run followed the 21-kilometer route from Birtle to Birdtail and started and ended with ceremony. It attracted participants from all across Canada and the US who ran either in person or virtually.
So it actually reached like quite a wide range of people. And even now, like months later, like reflecting back, I'm still getting emails of people wanting to, you know, participate for next year and ask if they can make their own reconciliation run. And like, I'm really excited to hopefully, you know, see it expand across the country and, you know, give other communities the opportunity to, you know, reclaim those spaces. And residential schools were put all across Canada. So to be able to give, you know, that healing and that reclamation to other communities, I think would be really cool to kind of see the reconciliation run expand in that way. But it was a truly like beautiful and remarkable day. And I'm already so excited to, you know, see it grow and to organize it again for next year.
Take us through what it was like sort of as you made this progression from the Birtle residential school grounds back to Birdtail Sioux First Nation.
Yeah. So like the interesting thing about the reconciliation run is it's actually like an officially sanctioned half marathon. So it's sanctioned with the Manitoba Runners Association. So big shout out to them for, you know, helping us, especially as not being a runner for me, like organizing a half marathon would have been tricky kind of without relying on them for their support and their guidance. So
the race directors across Canada will be nodding along.
Yeah. So having their, you know, direction and kind of following their like sanctioning package and like checklists and stuff was really helpful. But I think kind of where we kind of saw like Indigenous ways kind of intermixing with like Western ways would be like through that sanctioning. And, you know, when you say you're sanctioned, you know, you will have some competitive runners come out and they do want to have their times. But for the reconciliation run, just because, you know, it was on the day for National Day for Truth and Reconciliation, and it was based more for, you know, education and reflection purposes, there was like no like first, second and third like kind of medal ceremony or anything like that. So every participant did get gifted like just like a medal. I think it was just amazing because everyone was really pushing themselves for their right reasons. And one individual shared with me that, you know, throughout the run, they were getting so tired and they're like, I don't know if I can keep going. And they said, I just kept thinking like the kids would have given anything to run and do the run that I'm running right now. And I kept going. I hugged every participant once they crossed the finish line and gave them a medal. And we did have some pretty like trained and I want to say seasoned runners, but we did have those people who, you know, just showed up just, you know, simply for the reflection and just simply to honor, you know, survivors and all the children who never made it home. So I think by them being open and sharing, you know, like, yeah, that was hard, but thinking of the kids who would want nothing more than to run this exact road, you know, a few generations ago and a few years ago, like kept me going. My cushy Pauline, she was waiting at the finish line with me. And it was funny, my cousin Ira Soto ended up being the first person to finish the half marathon. So it was a proud moment for my cushy Pauline, because her mother, my cushy Mildred, is the one who attended Birtle Residential School. So she said that she was filled with so much happiness because, you know, we were doing that to honor her mother, her late mother. And then I was organizing it. And then she said, and my grandson finished first. So yeah, it was a beautiful moment and just seeing everyone come together. And we had a teepee at the finish line kind of signifying like you made it home. It was kind of set up where the finish line was at the end of a hill. People kept saying they got over the hill and then they saw the teepee and then they knew they were home. So I think that was beautiful.
For those who have not been to the Birtle Residential School, what is on the grounds now? Is the school building still there?
Yeah, so the school is still standing. And I think almost like the haunting aspect of it is that it's on a hill. So it's on a really big high hill. So the minute you drive into Birtle, you can see the big brick building. It kind of just sits there and like overlooks everything to me. And it is privately owned now, actually. So an individual does own it, but honestly, in the future, I would like to, you know, get that building back for my community as another way of reclaiming that space. But you can definitely get an eerie feeling, and especially when you are aware of what happened in that building, I think it definitely speaks to how it looks. It doesn't look like a very nice place.
Do you see it any differently now since the healing walk and the reconciliation run? I understand entirely the desire to have that come back into the ownership and the hands of your community and of the nation. I'm wondering if you are seeing it as any less imposing, or if you have any different sort of relationship with it now that you've worked on some of these, you know, reclamation efforts.
Yeah, I think definitely now when I drive in, I definitely think of the healing walk and the run, where for so long it was, you know, how I felt when I was 10 years old when I first visited it. So I think that's definitely changed, where my first immediate response isn't, you know, that dark and heavy feeling that I once felt when I was younger. But I honestly feel like it'll probably like sit better to me when I know it's back in the hands of my community, and that we can kind of totally reclaim that space. But no, the narrative definitely has shifted a little bit, you know, from, you know, kind of like dark and heavy to, you know, more of we did reclaim that space with the healing walk and the run.
You talk about how you want to ensure that this continues. I'm wondering what the ongoing impact do you think is? You know, we started this conversation talking about how movement is medicine. And it sounds like, again, that was very evident both with the healing walk and with the reconciliation run. I'm wondering what your hopes are, or what you've seen in terms of ongoing impact for your communities.
I think movement, even as a way of healing, but also, you know, just to say like physically healthy is a way that, you know, the run has like impacted my community. And I know a lot of like our youth like came out and they walked and ran the reconciliation run. So some ran and then they took breaks and walked. But, you know, just getting the young kids out there and getting them moving, I think is so important, especially for our communities and working to keep everyone healthy. I think it kind of, the reconciliation run and knowing that it's going to be like an annual thing is kind of like an intergenerational sort of thing, where, you know, like the elders and survivors are getting like the opportunity to heal and to reflect and to share their stories and pass down their knowledge. But it's also a way to keep like the youth kind of working towards something. And I know a lot of the kids are saying like, I'm going to be training, getting ready for next year. And like, it's something to look forward to. And it's like surface level, it could be like healthy living, but there's so much more of like a deeper meaning behind that, like internally. So I think it kind of speaks to, again, like the four quadrants of the medicine wheel. And, you know, like the reconciliation run is like working to keep my community like healthy, like physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And I think if I can create something that, you know, speaks to the elders in my community and our survivors and all the way down to the youth, and to have this positive ripple effect going on for the years to come, I think is the most important thing to me, knowing that I'm making an impact in a positive way.
So two additional sort of, you know, arms to that. I know that after the costs of the run were covered, the proceeds were donated to the Aboriginal Health and Wellness Center in Winnipeg. Maybe you can tell us just a little bit more about the work that's being done by that organization.
Yeah, so I think when we decided to like kind of pick an organization to donate the remaining funds to, we kind of considered a few, but I think the Aboriginal Health and Wellness Center in Winnipeg stuck out the most to me, just because it relates to kind of what I just said about like the intergenerational healing. And they provided like counseling for elders and survivors, but also like parenting classes and different things for youth to be involved in, and different resources, kind of really tailoring to the intergenerational effects of the residential school system. And I think that is probably something that's the most important thing for me to talk about, is I think so often the narrative that, you know, this happened so long ago when in fact it didn't, but a lot of times people don't understand the intergenerational effects and the intergenerational trauma, you know, that's passed down through generations. And, you know, whether that's trauma, or it's even like having like a negative relationship with schooling, you know, like we see like a lot of Indigenous peoples aren't pursuing like post-secondary education. And it's like, it speaks to also to like how there's so many different widespread effects that the Aboriginal Health and Wellness Center in Winnipeg really kind of connected to that intergenerational healing and that intergenerational need for, you know, resilience and power that I think comes from the reconciliation run. So I think the two kind of connected well together.
And then additionally, you know, as part of the Under Armour Diversity Series, your community will be receiving a $5,000 product donation from Under Armour, maybe like in broad strokes. If you could speak to some of the ideas you might have about the impact that some of that that running gear might have on your community as well moving forward, especially knowing that this is going to be an annual run.
Yeah, I think that's really exciting. I think that was probably the most exciting thing to me about the opportunity, is, you know, being able to give back to my community by organizing the reconciliation run, but also, you know, having these opportunities come from it that will, you know, further impact my community. And to kind of, I think it kind of inspires, like the donation from Under Armour, I think definitely will inspire, you know, the community to continue engaging in the reconciliation run and kind of provide resources that are needed for a lot of the youth in our community to, you know, have gear that they can use for running to stay healthy and active, not only for the reconciliation run, but, you know, the other 364 days of the year. So that's going to be great.
I know, of course, your goal is to have this be an ongoing project for the reconciliation run to continue. And it sounds like as well for it to expand. I'm wondering what you're looking most forward to personally in 2023 for your community and yourself.
Everything I do is kind of for my community. And I think personally for myself, everything I do is, you know, in honor of my Cushy Mildred and my own Kaw Donald. I'm just so inspired by their resilience, and their resilience is quite literally why I'm here today. So I think everything I do, whether that's playing hockey or, you know, pursuing my post-secondary education is in honor of them. And it's for them and my community to, you know, be that positive role model. And I think for a while, that's something I kind of struggled with, is considering myself a role model. I just kind of lead by example. So I like to do things and just hope that it can inspire the next person, or inspire one person, and making that one small change or that one small impact every day. I'm graduating this spring with my undergraduate degree, and I'm applying to law school for the fall of 2023. So I'll be waiting in the new year to hear about my acceptance and if I get admitted or not. So that's kind of exciting personally. But yeah, I'm excited to continue working on the reconciliation run and kind of just continuing my passion for advocating for my community and the rest of the Indigenous peoples across Turtle Island. I also often say that, you know, when you do stuff and you do work like I do, you get tied to kind of terms of like advocate or activist, but for me it's always just kind of been a duty and responsibility, and it just kind of seems like it's from my heart. So it's kind of like heart work, so it never really feels like work at all. It's something I truly enjoy doing, so I'm excited to continue working on that. And, you know, I say share my story, but it's also sharing, you know, my grandparents' stories, and people are finally listening, so thank you for letting me share my story, but also my grandparents' story that they never got to share.
You can learn more about Treshelle and about the Under Armour Diversity Series by visiting runningmagazine.ca. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Shakeout Podcast. Thanks, as always, for tuning in. Run safe and strong, and we'll chat again soon.